Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined today by John Herman, rate strategist for MUFG. We're publishing this podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's Wednesday, April 15th, 2020. In this episode, we explore the implications of the weak March retail sales data, discuss what the recovery may look like, and investment implications of that scenario. John, as you had forecast, March retail sales were extremely weak. I know you're expecting an even weaker print in April. In spite of those declines, financial markets appear to be looking through recent weakness and implying a complete recovery. Are there other indicators that might prevent such a full recovery?
Thank you, John. Great to be with everyone again. So yes, the March retail sales report, very dynamic, very interesting. You know, sales of big ticket items, durable goods, as we call them, very weak. Most components of retail sales weak. The consumer, as people were discussing about stay at home, consumers really endeavored to stock up inventories of food, household items, and the like, and store them on at home. So the online sales very strong. Foods, grocery stores extremely strong. They're a little stronger than we were expecting, but in general they fit with the pattern. What we worry about is as John was saying, the investors are reasonably confident to say that all of the fiscal policy and all the monetary policy that's being done, not just in America but abroad, should be enough to engineer a full recovery from this downdraft in the second quarter, first and second quarter, by 6 to 12 months from now. The thing that we worry about and that we see is kind of arresting the strength of that recovery and potentially weighing after that on the escape velocity is we worry about the job market. And as we noted last week, what we expect to be just a huge surge in the percentage of the unemployed people over the near term. So in particular, just as an example to tie it in with the retail, we saw a big decline in restaurant sales and so on. We're seeing that in all of the leisure hospitality components of the employment reports. But I think most people would agree that, over the next 6 to 12 months, it's unlikely that restaurant activity, given the community spread of COVID, that the restaurant activity is going to be anywhere near what it was just 2 or 3 months ago. So there's an example of not, but even more generally, what we see is we see a huge fraction of people in our models. The unemployment rate goes up to 12% the way the government calculates it. In our models, it's actually closer to 15% over the very near term. As we recover, we think we move down from that 15 percentage range down to maybe 9%. You're still leaving a giant pocket of people who have not been recovered and reemployed and reattached to the labor force and the like. And that's what we see weighing on the strength of the recovery as we go forward in time, and then potentially inhibiting the escape velocity that people would want to see going past that.
Thanks, John. As readers of your research know, you have argued for some time that various structural issues in the U.S. labor markets are likely to weigh on growth and inflation. Could you briefly explain how that view could intersect with the less than vigorous recovery you just outlined?
Yeah, so as John's saying, the three big structural problems we see in the United States labor force. One, we share with Europe and with Japan and Singapore, Hong Kong, Canada, we share an aging of the population. So that's a big issue here. Those problems become they've been severe since around 2011, 2012, 2010, since that time, but they become super severe starting in the year 2022, running through the year 2029, 2030. So very, very big, enormous headwind, first thing. Second thing is we've been seeing, basically in the prime age category, still the lingering after effects from the last recession, the long-term unemployment that was there, the opioid crisis, the workers who moved on to disability and the like. We still see prime age, full-time jobs in the prime age people not fully recovered now, even before the recession started. So millennials are another issue. Young people, 35, 36 and under, young people's participation rates versus their baby boomer parents, for example, are a good 10 to 14 percentage points lower than baby boomer participation at the same age. So those three areas just are very big headwinds for us for the growth rate and inflation rates for the U.S. all through this coming decade. So the confluence of these two events, that long-term wave for the next 10 years, essentially, in those three components of the labor force, with this disturbing recession shock that most likely is going to, you know, throw a huge number of people out of, you know, out of employment over the next 2 to 3 months, and then the recovery being subpar and not reattaching all those people, the confluence of the two for us just reinforces the dynamics of number one, kind of a subpar growth trajectory as we come out of this recession, first thing. Second thing, basically lower inflation expectations as we go forward. And then the third thing is, again, we still worry about this double dip recession risk that is targeting second half of year 2022 through the year 2023 as the aging dynamic really constricts and shifts and rolls over. So it's that timing that's really, really disturbing as a forecaster and as a market participant.
Thanks, John. So what are the investment implications of such a scenario? As example, how might the shape of the US yield curve evolve? Are there examples elsewhere that our listeners might look to for guidance?
So this is a big issue. So again, in the previous recovery, we struggled, and Bernanke had to do more and more non-conventional policies, more QE and the like, and so on. We see the same kind of dynamic this time. We see the Fed basically keeping zero interest rates around, not just this year, but all through next year, and most likely all through 2022 and 2023. So zero interest rate on the front end. So that would pull 2-year yields down towards, you know, 0 basis points as well. The low inflation, slow growth environment kind of keeps pressure on the 10-year yields to keep grinding in, even though it seems very counterintuitive at this point for that to be the case. And as you know, there's many people out there saying, look, who would want to own 10-year paper at this? The risk reward is horrible. You know, what about if they ever get this economy going? Gee, the inflation should come back. The inflation, that should go, okay, 10-year should rise. You know, what if we keep adding tons and tons of debt and deficits and so on? That should, you know, but yet still with all those risks, the 10-year yield grinds in, much like it did in Japan in years 2014, 2015. And we saw similarly following that episode a couple of years later in Germany, when bond yields went grinding from around down to about 88 basis points, and then they sort of gapped in from there down to about 40, 45 basis points as well. So that's the risk we worry about. We worry about a weird-shaped yield curve, very counterintuitive over the next, you know, couple of years as these very powerful dynamics play out in terms of the U.S. economy, both this kind of nearer intermediate term recovery being subpar with the longer term, intermediate, longer term risk of the labor force really working against us, not just in aging, but in other areas. And that combination just puts down a lot of downward pressure on the 2-year note yield and the 10-year note yield. And the implication being greater deficits, more debt spending by the government, that kind of backing up the 30-year bond yield and greater issuance in that part of the curve. That's what we worry about. So you end up with kind of a Japan-style yield curve in terms of slope and levels and stuff and the shape of the yield curve that we saw in 2014 and 2015. And that most people at that time said, oh, this is just a Japanese thing. And then a couple of years later, Germany had the same shape, and they're like, and people are like, oh my goodness. And now, you know, the next question is, will the U.S. be the third large economy to fall into that kind of shape yield curve? So very daunting in terms of the near and intermediate term outlook. A lot of concerns we have here. And so we continue to recommend to investors to be cautious, don't be complacent, and just, kind of look at things carefully as they move forward in time.
Great, John. That's great insight. And thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back next week for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.